Welcome to the Antisocial Podcast. Boys and girls, my name is Mr. Dowling. Thank you for your attendance this week for another podcast episode. That was my primary school teacher intro. Hope you like that one. Moving along, for you guys that have been listening to this podcast for however long, you'll probably know that I had a couple of goals for this year. One was to record an episode every week, which so far so good, because I didn't do that in previous years. And the other goal was to record podcasts in every capital city around the country for this year. Pick a weekend, fly somewhere, and keep doing that throughout the year. So far I've done Adelaide and Perth. I've done a bunch in Sydney itself, because I live more or less in Sydney for the most part. And a few weeks ago, I was in Melbourne. So when I was in Melbourne, I decided to kick it up a notch as opposed to the previous trips around the country. I had planned for 11 podcasts to be recorded in a 24-hour span. Extremely ambitious, unrealistic, and the end result was that I walked away from that weekend with about 7 done. So still better than what I would have done if I had just gone in with the same mindset of the previous trips around the country, but didn't quite get there. So for the next few weeks, I'm going to have a number of guests that I recorded whilst I was in Melbourne, and they're from all different backgrounds, different industries, different demographics, all sorts. And this week is one keeping in theme with my diversity of this podcast. So this week's guest is with a lady by the name of Shay Meddings. Now, Shay is a psychologist and works for a business that provides EAP counseling to employees of large and small organizations. So if you're in Australia, you probably know what EAP is, but I guess for anybody else or anybody that doesn't know what it means, it's an employee assistance program. So more or less, and I'm going to hack up the description of this, but for people that work for an employer, a lot of employers these days provide a phone counseling service that employees can call up without disclosing their personal information or their name or anything like that, and get some free counseling over the phone. It doesn't have to be work-related. It can be anything that is that might be on your mind. It might just be the case of venting about something or just having somebody else listen to something that's on your mind at that stage. Anyway, that's kind of what it is. So it's really, really good, and more employers are taking up these types of services, and it's becoming the exception that where employers aren't using these programs. It's almost becoming a standard requirement for so many people in the workforce now to have access to these types of programs. So Shay is a psychologist. She's had a number of years in the field. I met her at her office and we recorded a podcast there. And Shay's also got her own podcast, which is called Mental as Anyone. And her podcast is to talk about mental health and highlight it with primarily comedians, but just performers in the entertainment industry in general. And after we wrapped up our conversation for this episode, we flipped it over and I did a guest spot on her podcast as well, which I'm not sure when it'll be out, but if you go and search for Mental as Anyone on iTunes, my episode will be up by now or will be up within the next week or two. So I'm going to leave Shay explain about herself, her background, and what she's involved with. I was very self-conscious during this because I kept thinking that my comments and what I was saying was being psychoanalyzed, if that's the right term, by Shay. But Shay dispels that myth partially through this conversation. I'm dying here, guys. And dispels that myth. So I really hope you enjoy this. I think the big takeaway from this is that there are great services out there for people. I think mental health needs to be discussed a hell of a lot more out there. We need to not be so worried about disclosing things that are on our minds to family and friends, but also there's a lot of services out there that can help us. I'm going to put a bunch of links in the show notes for mental health resources in Australia. But if you are listening from overseas as well, by all means, get in touch with me and I'm more than happy to try and help you find an appropriate resource in your area as well. It's a big thing that's happening, I think. It's highlighted more and more through social media. We're so much more exposed and vulnerable in some ways. And I think a lot of people are highlighting their struggles or other people's struggles with mental health. And I think the more that we talk about it, the better it's going to be for each of us to overcome any personal challenges that we have. So enough rambling from me. Please enjoy this episode with Shane Eddings. Thank you for having me in your office.
You're very
on a
welcome.
Saturday.
Yes.
Very keen to be here. I have a lot of questions and they're all over the place, which is probably perfect. And you're probably used to this being or having the profession that you use.
Yeah, but I'm normally the one asking the questions. So.
But do people, I guess, well, actually, before we go off on a tangent straight away, do you want to give a bit of background about who you are and what you do?
Sure, yeah. So my name is Shay and I'm a psychologist. Mm-hmm. I do counselling as a job full time.
Yeah.
So basically 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Which is a bit tiring, but it's something that I really love and I'm passionate about. And yeah, that's pretty much it really.
So back to what I said before, maybe not erratic questions, but probably erratic answers.
Yeah.
You're probably, well, quite used to.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Because I think from my experience, the last time I ever spoke to, I've never spoken to a psychologist, but I've spoken to a counselor at school.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I can remember with that was the person telling me, "You're all over the place."
Oh, okay.
I thought, thanks. And that stayed in my head. But I've always had that, I think, a bit of a complex when I speak to people or I'm talking about myself quite a bit, that I'll go off in a whole range of tangents all at the same time. There's no structure to what I'm saying. And I'm always in the back of my head going, slow down, slow down, slow down.
Yeah.
But you must have a lot of that in the profession.
Mm.
That you're in.
Yep. And yeah. If I'm meeting someone for the first time, I generally let them go because the whole story will come out eventually. But if it's a later session or if it's even later in the first session, I'll say, well, hang on a minute, can I ask you about this? Because you skipped over that bit for me.
Is that a similar approach to people that deal with conflict management where you, or especially on the telephone, where you had that first phone call, you let them vent? Initially,
yeah,
just to get it all out on the table, and then you can go back and start breaking things down.
Yep, pretty much.
And I noticed that I don't know if you currently do it, but you have—is it the EAP programs?
Yeah, that's what I work for.
Yeah. So, and for EAP, I only know that just from working for different businesses over the years, and they would have that as part of their HR structure, and people would have the opportunity to be able to call up a third party and then go through any problems that they have.
Yeah. Yep.
So can you explain a little bit more about EAP?
Sure. Yeah. So we are one EAP provider. So there are lots of different ones, but basically it's an independent company that can be contracted to any company. Yep. So I think we work for about 600 different companies nationwide.
Wow.
And what it entails is, so the employer pays us, so the company pays us, but the employees can come along for free.
Right.
So EAP stands for Employee Assistance Program.
Yep.
And depending on the contract, they might set up that the employees can have, say, 3 sessions or sometimes it's 4 sessions or 6. Per issue that they have, and it doesn't have to be work related.
Okay.
It can be just any issue that they're having difficulty with, and then they come along, use the service. It's confidential, so we don't give information back to the company.
So that's a myth that needs to be broken, because a lot of people are always reluctant to use these services because they think that it's somehow going to get back to their manager.
Yeah, well, definitely not their names. There is some non-identifying statistical data that goes back, and we have processes. So when someone calls up, you need to answer a few questions to prove that you're an employee, basically. But other than that, so once they actually get through that processing, come into the room and have a session with me, none of that information goes back to the employer.
Right.
So,
and I guess having it open so it's not just work-related issues, because I guess everything, when you're thinking from a business point of view, whether it be business, whether it be work related or non-work related, it all stems back to the workplace anyway. So if you've got personal issues, it's going to, a lot of people can't leave it at the door.
Yeah.
They're going to drag it into, and dragging, for lack of a better word, but they bring it into the workplace and that obviously impacts the rest of the team, the rest of the environment, productivity, their money, et cetera, et cetera. So there probably is a lot of benefits to giving people an opportunity to talk about anything that's bothering them, not just, you know, their manager work stuff, or work colleagues or whatever it might be.
For sure. It's about keeping the workforce well, and I really believe in it. I think it's a really good early intervention. So rather than waiting until things go completely pear-shaped and then people bite the bullet and think, okay, well, I'm going to have to pay money to go get some assistance, they can give us a call and it can be reasonably quick. If they're happy to have a telephone session, it can generally be the same day that they call up.
Okay.
And that's why it's a short number of sessions as well, because the aim is that we get in quickly and hopefully resolve the issue. But sometimes we can't, because it just depends what comes up. But we can always help refer people on to receive longer term support as well.
Is it, I mean, there is, there's privacy around the people that utilize it and the issues and all the things that they raise and they discuss. But is there, in general terms, are there certain trends or things that are very similar across a large number of people? So if you've got people that, I guess, traditionally are working in an office environment, probably open floor plan style, a lot of call centers and whatnot, are there similar sort of things that you find that people have anxiety or stress or worries or concerns about, whether it be work or non-work related?
Yeah, there do tend to be themes and patterns. I'd say probably the most obvious one is relationships, and that can be at work or personal. Generally at work, it's either a conflict or bullying situation. And if it's at home, it might be their partner or sometimes it's kids and issues with parenting or whether they're young kids or even adult kids. But yeah, probably the main thing that I talk to people about is relationships, even if it's just one person coming in, although people are welcome to attend as a couple as well. So I sometimes see couples.
Is there a wide range of demographic and age that utilize the service?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because I would have, and this is me with no data or anything to back it up, but just my perception is that programs like this would be utilized more by younger people or that sort of 20 to 30 bracket. That sort of age where I guess people are really starting to get deep into the workforce and are trying to find their place and where they fit into anything in life, but especially at work as well, where you're starting to get into, well, is there a career path for me? Is this the job for me? And then all the other pressures outside of life as well. But people of all ages use the program?
Yeah, all ages. Right up to, well, I do see a lot of people who are age 50 or above for the issue of they're being made redundant and they're really worried about finding the next job. So there's a lot of insecurity about that when they are an older person. But I guess I probably wouldn't see what you classify as elderly people because they're not in the workforce.
Yeah, of course.
And at the other end of the scale, I do sometimes see kids, although my experience has been working with adults, so I've set the limit that I try not to see people under the age of 15 because I just don't have the experience. Although that said, I've had three teenagers in the past month. But because family members can sometimes access the service as well. It depends on the contract. They would refer
their children to utilise it?
Yeah. And we have a process around that. So we don't just see the child in the first session. We see the parent first, which, given that we only have a small number of sessions, can sometimes be hard. But to do a proper service, we've got to speak to the parent first so that, we can assess what the issue is and also if we feel we can help. So, or if there's another service that might be more appropriate.
Doing counselling for teenagers, I think, would be such a minefield and such a challenge.
Yeah.
Because going back to what we said at the start, or what I was saying at the start, with that sort of erratic sort of mindset, not knowing what's going on, and that's probably even worse than the example I was saying between 20 and 30 when you're in the workforce and trying to find your place. When you're a teenager, you have no idea what's going on. You're still trying to find your place. So I can understand that you would need people that are very experienced in dealing with that type of mindset, that type of mental behavior, and be able to to work with them.
Yep, sure. And even just rapport building, because teenagers, from my perspective, it can be easy to build rapport with them if they want to be at the service.
Mm.
But I've recently had, well, of the three that I saw recently, one of them did not want to be there. And I found it very challenging, because that's just, a whole new ballpark for me. So,
How do you approach that? I mean, as you said, it's something that you don't have a lot of experience in. You're mainly dealing with adults. But what are you trying to do as far as approach this particular scenario with this person?
Well, I just have to work at her pace.
Yeah.
And I can't push it. Mm. And I certainly have to be mindful of my own emotional responses to the situation and frustration in particular, because it's not about me. It's about her. And we don't have many sessions, and I feel the first one is always going to be the hardest, because it is, the child or the person doesn't know you from a bar of soap.
Mm.
But I'm hoping at least by the end of the small amount of sessions that we have, she'll be able to link in with somebody else.
Yeah.
And so that the experience she's had of the counselling so far has not been too bad, and that's my job, rather than actually helping her with the issues that she's having, just letting her know that help is available and that she's not going to be judged. And
it's coming from the mindset of a rebellious teenager that was an absolute handful for my parents, my teachers, even friends. I think with a lot of those things, when you begin a session like that, the kid probably thinks that they're in trouble. And so they're in defense mode straight away. So it doesn't matter what you say, I'm going to argue it, even if I know deep down that I'm wrong. I'm on the defense straight away. And I think if for people like that, and I'm generalizing, if they feel that they got some form of control and that they've got the platform where they can express themselves without being judged, then hopefully in your case, a short period of time, but over a period of time, they'll be able to break down those walls and then be able to talk with some, I guess, clarity and maybe a little bit of maturity as well, to be able to get their thoughts out. But it's a hard thing when you're a kid to try and interact with adults, because you don't know how to act.
Yeah.
And depending on how you've grown up and the people that you've grown up with and your surroundings, it really dictates where you are at that point in time. So I can't even begin. If we had the Twilight Zone and I end up being across the table from myself when I was 16, I would be struggling big time to try and cut through and try and have a normal conversation. I don't think I'd be able to at all.
Yeah. Whereas the other two that I've had recently were just angels in comparison.
Yeah, right.
They were really talkative. They were really on board with trying the things that I was suggesting to do differently to help them with their issues. And
do you think in those scenarios that they're really feeding off the fact that an adult is sitting there across the table and actually giving them the time of day to talk to?
Possibly. And I think in those two cases the teenagers both wanted to be there.
Yeah.
So as I said, it's that difference, and that doesn't mean that the third one doesn't need help.
Yeah.
And in fact, she probably needs the most help, but it's, she needs to come around to actually engaging in it.
There's some more groundwork that needs to happen first to get up to the speed of the other two.
Yeah. And who knows, it might not happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just do my best and yeah.
How do you, I was going to say, my initial thing I was going to say was, how do you sleep at night? But how do you, I guess, internalize a lot of these things and these scenarios? Because you would speak to a lot of people, and a lot of the time you would have conversations and people walk away and say thank you and I feel a lot better, and they may never need to come back again. And then those people where you get to the end of your sessions with them and you feel like you probably haven't really made a lot of ground with them at all.
Yeah.
And they, not that they're a lost cause, but you're not getting a lot of progress from them.
Yeah.
How do you deal with it personally? I mean, because I think from you, you've started within this industry with the focus to help people.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, I guess it's also recognizing that it's not about me, it's about them. Mm. And have you heard the joke about how many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb?
No.
Only one, but the light bulb needs to be willing to change.
Okay. I like it.
And, yeah, that's a bit of a thought to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's easy,
mm.
but that's the underlying thought to keep in mind, because people can only change if they're ready and willing to change.
Yeah.
And sometimes they will come in and have just one session and that might be enough they've had someone listen to them and, maybe not even give advice, but just check that they're on the right path.
Mm.
And so just having that confirmation that, yeah, does this sound okay to you, that this is what I'm thinking?
Mm.
And other times you might have a full set of sessions and then you just think, oh, wow, that person's, still got their journey ahead of them. So, but, yeah, it's just trying to accept that. I mean, I don't think I'll ever like it, but I can't control everything. So, yeah.
I think that's a big mental hurdle to jump over.
Yeah, sometimes it can be really hard. Yeah,
I think for most people, the natural instinct is to want to be able to help people when people are in trouble.
Yeah.
And in those cases where you haven't quite got to that result, it'd be quite challenging. But I guess from what you've just said, if you can have the acceptance that you've done everything that you possibly can in this situation, then I guess that gives you a little bit of peace of mind, although it's not perfect.
But you said about how do I sleep at night, and I'm even just thinking the very last session that I had, which was just over 12 hours ago, and in the room over there, it did not go very well.
Right.
It did not go very well at all. It was a couple and they basically broke up in the session.
Oh.
So it was pretty bad. And when I got home, I was really tired. And then we were going to go out for dinner and I said to my partner, can you drive? Because I'm, feeling a bit worn out. So he drove us and then we got home and I was still really wrecked. So I thought, oh, I've just got to go to bed and try and sleep it off. And, and I wasn't, I don't think I was in the best mood either.
Yeah.
I was just, feeling a bit deflated, I guess, and just,
It'd be really hard to, like, compared to other industries and other jobs where you can walk out at whenever you finish and you can leave it at the door.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you can in some cases, but it's not foolproof. Like, there will be days where it just, unfortunately, it's just going to stay with you for a bit longer, and then you just have to try and deal with it in the best way that you can.
So, and that's an unusual day. And the thing is, I didn't go home. I wasn't thinking about them, but it was just the emotions that kind of carried over.
Yeah.
And I'm not blaming myself, although I am thinking about, okay, well, because they're going to come back.
Yeah.
I hope. They've booked in.
Mm.
So, I'll just do my best. And what I ended up saying to them at the end of the session was, even if you decide to break up, you're still going to need to communicate because you've got children. So I think it's important that you keep coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, so we'll see what happens.
Heavy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, but I mean, that was just yesterday's example, but yeah, usually, because as I said, I do it full time, so I just have to look after myself.
I was going to say, you probably have to have so much more focus on that to have the longevity to do a job like this. If you're doing it full time, that's, I mean, how many sessions would you do a day on average? Six.
So it's 30.
Six intense.
Yeah. Oh, well, not always. Not always. Not always. Yeah. They're not always intense. Mm. Because another service that we provide with our company is it's called Career. Well, I won't say the name of it, but anyway, we do career stuff. So people can come in if, say, if they've been made redundant, then they can come in with their resume. We can talk about job interview skills.
Okay.
So that tends to be... even though it can be quite intensive with what we do, it's not emotionally heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
Although sometimes it can be because the people are want to speak about
initially,
their feelings as well.
So you have to sort of almost get through the emotion first and then start working on strategy and building up the tools to then make the next step and move on with their lives. Because I think I've been through it before with the whole redundancy thing, and I mean, I've missed out a couple of times, and when I was younger, I'm like, oh, man, I could really do with that money. And when you're young, it doesn't matter because you just go and find another job and you got a nice payout and you keep moving. And I could never understand when I was, especially in my early 20s, and I saw other people that I worked with that were older getting extremely upset and emotional when this has happened. Mm. I'm thinking, oh, call my name out. I'll take it. I'll take the money. That's fantastic. This, you know, you can always get another job.
Yeah.
And then... as I mature and get older and have things such as, you know, I've got a wife now, I've got a house, I've got responsibilities, bills, things that are reoccurring payments and whatnot, then you think, wow, like you really have to, you rely on these things. You rely on that stability.
Yeah.
And sometimes for good or bad, people rely on that too much. They rely on their job too much to ensure that everything else in their life is working accordingly. So I guess when that redundancy kicks in and they're not expecting it, their whole world gets turned upside down and it turns into a personal thing, not just the fact that they don't have a job anymore and they have to find another job. It can be a very big, very big dilemma.
Yeah. But then, sometimes it is just very practical that I don't have to, the person doesn't want to do the emotional stuff. They just want to do the practical stuff. Can you check over my resume? I've got an interview coming up. Can we practice for that? So it's not always really heavy stuff. And sometimes it's good because I'll see someone for one or two or three sessions, and then when they come in for their last session, things have resolved. Mm. So it can be really quite happy. It's
a good news story. I've always had this outlook on life where I learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah.
I'm always sitting back and I let other people make decisions, and then I will learn from, and even if I can see that they're making the wrong decision, I get a lot of satisfaction out of seeing other people go through it, and then I can make it, I know deep down, I go, well, I'll never do that. And so then I can make a better decision moving forward. Not that it's that straightforward with yourself, but working in this type of industry and this role that you're in and seeing a lot of people go through a lot of hardship and emotional, having emotional baggage and whatnot.
Yeah.
Is there things that you take out of every session that you do that applies into your personal life? Like, do you sort of go home when you're driving home each day and you're deflated or whatnot, that you sort of think, especially like when you're saying, tell me before about the couple that were in and pretty much broke up in front of you.
Yeah.
I was waiting for you to say something along the lines of, oh, well, I'm coming home, my partner's there, and now I'm feeling like something towards my partner, or you have you look at your partner differently because of.
Oh yeah. I was just grateful that he was there. So
yeah.
I guess it sometimes makes me grateful for, and not just about my relationship, but just that I don't have other situations in my life that clients come to talk to me about. Sometimes it can give me another perspective on my own stuff, whether it's, a way to deal with it, yeah. or maybe just putting it into perspective that, oh, gee, maybe that's not so bad because, yeah, other people are dealing with worse situations.
Sort of like a fly on the wall in a way sometimes, just to be able to get insight into, I mean, for me, I'm always looking for the positives in things and taking advantage of situations in a good way. But to be able to speak candidly to people and for people just to put themselves out there and be vulnerable, it is about them. And in, when you're in that setting, it is about them. But, you know, as you said before, like sometimes things can carry over and you take things with you. So no doubt being that sort of, that fly on the wall and being able to learn so much about people face to face. It's sort of like podcasting in a way. I mean, without this these microphones and this recorder, so many people that I've had on this podcast, I'd never have a conversation with, or even friends. It's amazing what you talk about when these things are in our hands. As opposed to if they're not there, then you tend to talk about really trivial, just silly things. And then it's usually over beer. You get louder and drunker and start to slur, and nothing ever really deep anything really deep or complex is talked about. But when you've got some microphones, it's amazing. Everyone opens up, and I walk away from so many of these episodes where I go, I had no idea that person even thought that or did that, or they had that experience or that story. And I've known them for 15 odd years. And it's incredible. So I think being in this type of job and doing this on a day-to-day basis, you would learn so much from people, because you wouldn't, in a normal setting, you wouldn't have these conversations.
You're right.
I'll segue.
Yeah, sure.
So you've got a podcast.
Yes.
Mental as Anyone?
Yes.
Okay. And for the most part, you have comedians.
Yep.
Do you want to give me a rundown of that?
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess it started a couple of years ago. The first kind of event that happened was when Robin Williams died, and I was thinking just, how terrible that was. And even though it might not have been his mental health issues that ultimately killed him, he still was suffering a lot, and it was kind of that split life that comedians can have, like the really public life versus their private thoughts and feelings. And then Felicity Ward, who's an Australian comedian, she did a documentary about her anxiety. I think it was called Felicity's Mental Mission. It was on the ABC in October 2015, I think. And, so she was just being really candid about her experiences with anxiety. And I was thinking, gee, I'd really like to get involved somehow, because I love comedy, and I'm always a big supporter of the festival and try and go and see heaps of shows. So I actually contacted the festival and just said, is there any way I could maybe do some volunteer counselling or something? And they were lining something up or doing something with Beyond Blue. So they said, oh, it's probably not going to work, but thank you. And then I came up, I think my friend had started podcasting, Chris Asher. So he had his podcast, which is the podcast formerly known as. And then I kind of thought, well, maybe I could put a podcast together. It's obviously not going to be funny, but I could interview comedians or entertainers about their mental health and reach a wider audience. And the idea being that I can try and spread some awareness and better understanding about mental health, and just that, pretty much everybody's got some sort of story to tell, and just to, for want of a better word, normalize it and just know that, kind of everybody goes through something. So,
Do you find with comedians or entertainers, but I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and and I think comedians have taken over podcasts. Some of the most famous podcasts out there, especially in the United States, a lot of them are comedians that run their own podcasts. And listening to them, and some of them are very candid, very open, and you go, oh, my God, like, just there's so much complexity in their way of thinking. And then you try and I guess this is me trying to fit things into holes all the time, but I think that works or links straight into what they do. A lot of this is this anxiety of wanting to be accepted or being in front of people and wanting people to like them. And then they're on stage, they're performing and they're interacting with people. Do you find that with a lot of the people that you've had on, that there's similar sort of things that people go through? Or is it just a human, just a person, sort of everyday person, personal challenges that people have? Is there something unique to comedians and performers that they go through as opposed to other everyday people?
I think it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
And yeah, there are certainly commonalities that I've found with comedians and like performance anxiety or just wanting to get not approval, but just wanting people to enjoy what they're doing.
Yeah.
That's pretty common. But then I think I've also had a lot of variety with the stories because everybody's got a different background. And just thinking of some recent episodes, I spoke to someone whose grandparents had been prisoners of war.
Okay.
And there's an interview with a cancer patient and just his experiences because
what's his name? He was on Reese's.
Yeah. I had an interview with him too, and it was just really powerful. And he's got a really positive message because, and I think his catchphrase is make the rest of your life the best of your life.
Yeah,
because you never know how long you've got, and for him, it's a lot more real because he probably literally does have a time frame.
Yeah.
Whereas while we might not know what our time frames are particularly, we could get hit by a bus tomorrow.
Yep.
So, it's just trying to make the best of,
I guess it's sort of, this is something I tend to do, I try and put people into categories all the time. But I guess the big thing with everybody is that regardless of everyone being a comedian or everyone being an entertainer or a performer, is that everyone's got an individual story that's got them to where they are now. So while they're all, they might be getting on stage and expressing themselves in front of people, they're there for different reasons. There's different reasons as to why they've decided to make that decision or why they're sitting on stage and what they're actually saying to people.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
How did you get into psychology or what made you want to do it in the first place? Was there an event or something that happened growing up or when you're getting sort of closer to working out what you're going to do for a career or for a job?
Yeah, I think I always just knew, which is unusual, but I didn't actually know how I was going to get there in terms of the study involved and everything like that. Mm. But I always knew that I wanted to help people. And in my earlier teens, when I first got to high school, I was thinking of maybe being a lawyer or a teacher. And even as a little kid, I used to, with my brother, who's a year younger than me, I'd play schools and I'd draw up worksheets for him to do and he'd have to do the work. And I'm like, oh, that's probably not very fun for him.
Not only is he copying it when he actually goes to school, but when he comes home, he's copying it as well.
Yeah. So I did that. But I think just around year 10 or year 11, and I knew that I'd be able to study psychology in year 11.
Yeah.
I just knew that that's what I was going to do. So, I was lucky.
And going through that formal education, how long does it, I mean, what's the qualification look like? What's your qualification?
I'm registered as a psychologist with APRA, who are the Australian Health Professional Registration Authority or something like that.
Okay.
Not be quite the right acronym, but in terms of qualifications, there are a couple of different pathways and it's even changed since I've become registered. Yeah. It's a little bit harder now, unfortunately, but don't let it discourage you if that's what you want to do. But basically you need to do an undergraduate degree and then a fourth year.
Mm.
So an undergraduate degree majoring in psychology. Then the fourth year, so I did my honours year, But you could also do a postgraduate in psychology. I did honours in psychology. And then you can do 2 more years after that of master's, or 3 years, 3+ years with a PhD. And what I actually did was, so after my 3 years of undergrad plus a fourth year of honours, I did 2 years, or actually extended a bit longer than that, but it's a minimum of 2 years of registration via supervision, which is just, it's a fancy way of, it's basically like an internship, but it essentially means that you can work as a provisional psychologist. So you don't have your full registration, but you're working towards gaining your full registration. And the board at APRA set you a series of criteria that you have to meet. So it is essentially like being at uni, but you do a day job.
It's practical work in a sense.
Yeah, and I never got a certificate. Well, I did get a certificate at the end, but it wasn't a master's. It was just, I'm registered as a psychologist now.
So when you began your training and you realized your formal education, going through all these steps and these years of, I guess, immersing yourself in it all, did you find that when you began to learn and educate yourself that you were starting to look at people differently? Did you, I mean, not profiling people, but watching watching people's behaviours and the way that they react to situations, or the way that they respond or express themselves? Did you?
Yeah, maybe a bit, but because quite a common question that you get asked as a psychologist is, are you analysing me right now? And my general answer is, well, no, like, are you going to pay me? Or, but I guess in some ways you can't help it, but it's not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
Because being a psychologist, I don't go around judging people, because that's defeats part of being a psychologist, not to judge.
Yeah.
So I might be, in fact, more understanding, because I'll go, oh, that person was just rude to me, but, well, they might have been having a really bad day. So, yeah, I'm just going to maybe smile at them, or rather than react.
Yeah. I was speaking to somebody the other day, James Straker, who hopefully will be the previous guest on the podcast. And we were talking about scenarios of things such as road rage. And when someone's driving up your rear end or trying to intimidate you on the road and speeding and whatnot, and your natural instinct for a lot of people is to flip them off or yell at them or whatnot and get really angry.
Yeah.
And what James had said was, what I do is I look at them and think, maybe there's an emergency, maybe there's something going on, maybe their son's just been rushed to hospital, or their wife's in trouble or whatever, and they're just doing whatever they can to get there, and they don't normally drive like that. There's just something that's caused them to be in this state of emergency, and that calms him down so he doesn't get road rage. Yeah. And I guess that would be a similar concept to what you just said, where you really start to think about different perspectives.
Yeah,
it's not just about your initial instinct of reacting to whatever is going on. It's looking at it from a whole range of different places.
Yeah, for sure. Although I can still react, don't worry, because I'm human like everyone else. So
it's an ongoing challenge. I do a similar thing with road rage is a big one, where I don't think I'm a terribly angry person on the road, but I do a lot of driving, and I'm always seeing examples of absolutely horrific driving etiquette on the road.
Yeah.
And I do find myself constantly getting ready to blast someone or toot the horn or whatever it might be. And I'm always desperately trying to think, no, they're probably a really nice person, there's something going on, and I'll just sit back. Or maybe it's not a good idea to blast the horn or flip them off, because they could be psychotic and they could run me off the road.
Yeah, there's always that chance, yes. So, yeah, good to try and keep you calm. Don't let them spread their mood around.
Yeah.
Just, try and look at the bigger picture that, okay, well, it's not the end of the world if they've just cut me off. I just want to be safe.
Mm.
So, I'll just stay calm, and I'm still going to get where I need to be.
Mm.
It's, yeah.
Do you think that in a lot of cases where there's crime and the act of violence and whatnot out there, that a lot of it is based off reacting to situations? So just using the example you said before where you're staying impartial, do you find that in a lot of cases when people are in a state, the reason why things escalate is because other people are reacting to that situation? Like, I always look at random acts of violence or random acts of crime or whatnot aren't always that random. There's usually a time and a place, a set of circumstances, and people are making bad decisions. So
maybe, and then you add in factors like drugs and alcohol and maybe relationship issues as well, because the majority of, well, I'm just thinking about domestic violence is generally between people who know each other as opposed to random acts of violence on the street, because I think they're probably different categories. So
that's it. There's probably in those cases is a number of different events that are leading up to that event of violence or whatever it might be, and it's not so much that people are reacting badly, but it's just the case that people are they're in close proximity to each other, and these events are happening that lead to that example of domestic violence. But I can think of one example in Melbourne's, unfortunately, one of these places where there's a lot of homeless people around. I mean, just downstairs on the street, I was sitting there waiting to come up. There's a lot of people around. And I remember years ago, and I've always kept this in the back of my head when it comes to just keeping out of other people's business and just flying under the radar. Years and years ago, I was walking up Bourke Street and we're coming back from a show, and I'd had quite a few beers, and we walked past a shop front, and it was probably 3 o'clock in the morning, and there was three people sitting there on the stair, and they were yelling out at people, and they said something to us. I think they're trying to offer us something. And I don't think I said anything too bad, but I think I just mimicked their voice and we're just walking by. Anyway, the next thing that happened is I'm running up Bourke Street and a guy is chasing me with a broken off beer bottle trying to glass me. And so I had to there was a nightclub, and I'm standing behind the bouncer who's trying to get rid of me, and this guy is standing in front of the bouncer with this broken bottle. And that event made me think, well, there's not so much, that's not a random act of violence. I caused that to escalate. If I had walked past and just ignored it, maybe something could have happened, but more than likely they would have just waited for the next people to walk past and keep talking or yelling out to the next group of people. And so I always think that with a lot of people, they're in their own world, and then if you decide that you want to break into that bubble and interact with them in a bad way, then there's that reacting mechanism. So for me, my lesson that I learned from that is to get a bit of perspective. It's a bit hard when you're intoxicated.
but to understand
that.
Yeah,
but to keep to yourself and understand that, you know, there might be bad people out there, but a lot of the time they're bad, or, and I shouldn't say bad because they're homeless, but they were yelling at things that were bad. Bad behavior. That's right. And a lot of that is due to their own set of circumstances. They're in their own bubble. They're in their own version of reality. And that's been caused by environment, people that they associate with, the sequence of events that have got them there. And that's got nothing to do with you. So it's anyway, that's one challenge that I've tried to overcome, and I could have learnt that lesson in a very, very hard way. And luckily I was relatively lucky.
And I guess again, alcohol lowers our inhibitions. So and our judgment affects our judgment, and you might be more outgoing than you normally would. So it's probably not a positive factor on the whole situation.
No, you're already running risk of something bad happening as soon as you start drinking alcohol in general. I'm keeping on the time, but just before I wrap it up, I wanted to ask, I don't know how far this question will go, but with the scenarios of, and I know you don't have a lot of experience with younger people when it comes to counselling, but with schooling and mm-hmm. also work environments. And I haven't really prepared this question, but it's come up in my head just a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
But both environments are very old in the way that they've been built. So the schooling system, the way that we educate people, and it is changing, but it's a very old structure. It's something that was created 100 odd years ago and it was there for a particular purpose, and that purpose isn't as relevant these days as what it used to be. And the same with the work environment, where you come into an office building, you've got your seat, you're there from this time to this time, and you get paid for the time that you're there.
Yeah.
Do you find that a lot of the, and I guess your experiences are going to be more with adults rather than kids in school, but do you find that a lot of the problems and the concerns and issues that people raise through these counselling programs are things that relate to, I mean, I know there's, just thinking about work-related problems, do they relate to the type of environment that they're in? So what I'm trying to get to is that I think my opinion with a lot of people and the anxieties they have in the workplace is that the fact that there's these strict things that they need to adhere to. They've got to be in the office at a certain time, and they got to, and they leave at a certain time. If you're 2 minutes late, you're in trouble. But if you stay back 5 or 10 minutes, no one even acknowledges it or recognizes it.
Yeah.
And the way that we interact in the workplace, where we're getting paid a lot of the time for the time that we're there, just to be seen sitting at a desk rather than us actually doing some work that's productive. So do you find a lot of anxieties around those sort of things?
Yeah, there can be at times, especially if there's something else going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if there is another, say, a personal problem at home, which means that the person is not sleeping very well, and then they find it hard to get up in the morning, and so they're later than they would normally be, and there's just flow-on effects. Mm. But I would say workplaces are evolving and some more so than others, that they are introducing more flexible hours, being family friendly, because people who have kids need to drop them off a daycare or family or wherever the kids are going to be minded for the day, or get them to school. Yeah, there is always going to be the rush hour in the morning, but then there's even situations like work from home or, just a bit more flexibility with workplaces these days.
Do you find that the volume of inquiries that come through from the businesses that have more flexible working arrangements are less than businesses that have more of a strict or that old school structure as far as very strict times and adherence and whatnot?
I would say no, but I would say when somebody is thinking about leaving their job because, say, their manager, they're having conflict with their manager, I think they're less, it's not that they're less likely to leave, but it's just that they've also got some good reasons to stay versus the reason that they're considering leaving.
It's really interesting because I guess from personal experience, but also seeing a lot of friends of mine and, being a musician or even with comedians as well, a lot of us don't do it full time. You just can't, there's no money in it.
Yeah.
Or there's not enough money to sustain a viable existence. So everyone's working some form of job, whether it be a full-time job, part-time, casual, whatnot. Yeah. And I think a lot of friends of mine that do have the job on the side or the passion on the side or whatever it might be really struggle with the structure of the workplace.
Yeah.
And the authority and the adherence and whatnot.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people go through job after job after job.
Okay, yeah.
And but I know a few people that have been very fortunate that have found an employer that gives them those scenarios where flexible working hours or working from home, and those people have flourished.
Yeah,
okay. And they're almost getting paid for their output rather than their time.
Yeah.
And I've had this in the past where I can sit in an office for 7 or 8 hours and the work that I do there, if I do that at home, I get that done in about 2 hours.
Yeah.
But for a lot of employers, they're happier for you to be in the office and only get 2 hours worth of work done in 8 hours because you're sitting there and they can see you and you're visible.
Yeah.
And there's some added benefit to them that a desk is filled and there's somebody in the office. But
well, sometimes it's also just practicality. Like, I can't really do my work from home.
No, it'd be a bit harder for you.
Yeah, I can if it's telephone bookings that I've got, but even then, appointments can be cancelled or changed right up until the last minute.
Yeah.
And then if they're going to be rebooked, it might be a face-to-face one, in which case I need to be in the office.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it kind of makes it a bit hard for some.
I guess it depends on the job, doesn't it? It's food for thought. I've been, especially in the last few months or last couple of years, I've really sort of taken an interest in the way that schooling and employment is changing, and I think people are understanding that there's more balance, work-life balance and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it's not about working for the weekend anymore. It's about trying to find fulfillment in what you do in every day. And it's not dreading the Monday, well, thank God it's Friday. It's every day it can be fulfilling and you can get something out of it.
Yeah, for sure. That sounds good. And, yeah, as for schools, I don't really know much because schools can't be terribly flexible in terms of rules and things like that. I mean, there's always degrees, but yeah, it is a bit of, well, it's an institution.
Yeah, it is. I certainly felt that way when I was a kid. Absolutely. Yeah,
and so I do appreciate that school is not for everyone, but it's just, I guess, working within the parameters of the institution, because you can have, I think it then comes down to the people who are there.
Yeah.
So you might have a teacher who is really flexible and accommodating and will work really hard to engage with the students and the different ways that they might learn. Whereas you might just have someone else who's a real stickler for the rules and the kids are constantly getting in trouble and yelled at, and unfair.
I've had both, and it's amazing. Yeah. I guess it's maybe it's understated at times. I'm sure if you work in education, you appreciate it, but you only need to have one experience and you can be scarred for life. And scarred or impacted for life, positive or negative. And I've had both. I've had amazing teachers that I still remember, and there's things that I do because of particular situations that I've had. And then I've had absolute punishes of teachers, and that stayed in my head as well. And there's things that I've been reluctant to do because of things that have been drilled into me when I was a kid as well.
Yeah, okay.
So it's an interesting. It can be a very sensitive period of time for a person to go through, and I guess the impact that can be made on kids is quite dramatic.
Yeah, that's right. And just hoping that they've got some support if they need it.
And if you've got 30 kids in a classroom and they're all different as well, and it's the same as a workplace, if you've got policies and procedures in a workplace and you've got 20-odd people that work in this particular area, they're all different. They've got their strengths and weaknesses in so many different places. And one person will respond positively to structure and statistics, and they're very analytical.
Yeah.
And somebody else is extremely emotional, and they need to be able to understand it from that point of view. And managers and bosses or teachers don't have the time, a lot of the time, to individually channel that information in a way that works for that person. It's a big, I mean, and I don't know how you fix it, because more teachers, more managers, well, probably not more managers, we don't need more managers.
Well, I guess I'm really lucky where I work. I'm really happy with the people that I work with, although I also think that just by the very nature of the job that I do, because I'm one-on-one with clients, not with my colleagues, that even though I've worked for this company for, it's almost 6 years, the exposure to internal politics is very, very low, very low.
Yeah.
So, and but not that there is much going on anyway. So,
yeah.
And I actually really like and respect pretty much all of the management at my company. And, yeah, that's why I think it's, yeah, a really good place to work.
Yeah, definitely works and, for you.
Yeah, and the good thing is we've got our own EAP as well. So, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, we practice what we preach. I really
and
like
you,
that.
Do you utilize your own EAP business? For,
no. So it's an external one, yeah, one a smaller one. Yeah. So, yeah, it's really good. Yeah. But, yeah, it would be a bit hypocritical if we were saying to other workplaces
that to utilize your services.
It's such a great service.
And you don't
and
use
then
it yourselves.
We don't have one.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, no matter what we do and what we're skilled in and have expertise in, we all need that human interaction. We need to bounce ideas off. We need to be able to sometimes vent and have a discussion with somebody, even just to talk out a thought.
Yeah.
And that person doesn't, I'm sure you've had this where people will come in with a problem and they'll just talk themselves into the solution and you don't have to say it. You just guide them a little bit and they already know what the answer is.
Yeah,
they know
what
they need to do, but they just need that opportunity to be able to have a sounding board.
Yeah, exactly.
To be able to get it out.
In a safe environment that's, confidential. So, they don't have to talk it through with family or friends because there could be repercussions of doing that.
Yeah.
And generally, if that's the case, talking it through with, say friends, they might be biased one way or the other and because they care about you, but if you come to a counseling session, then there's not going to be a bias or an agenda. It's just what is it that's going on for you and how do you want to approach it?
Very good. All right, I'm watching the time, so we'll wrap it up. Time
yeah,
to do
sure.
your podcast, but
oh,
thank you
okay,
very
yeah.
much for letting me have a chin wag with you. And I'm looking forward to getting on the topic of mental health.
Yeah,
I'll see what I can pull out.
Thanks for having me, Andy. It's been great.
Great, thank you. Thanks, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that episode with Shay Meddings. If you want to check out Shay's podcast, it's called Mental as Anyone. You can find that on iTunes and Stitcher and all those podcast catching platforms. And I'll also have the links over at andysocial.net in the show notes for this episode. So you can click on there to find out more about Shay and her podcast. I'll also have a bunch of links. Shay was really cool. She gave me this little gift bag that she gives to all of her guests that appear on her podcast. And there was some little chocolates and whatnot in there. But there was a little piece of paper and it's quite cool what she does. It's got a whole bunch of resources to different mental health resources, counseling services and whatnot. And there's a lot of really, I'm just trying to grab it right now. There's a lot of really important organizations in Australia that provide outlets and resources for people that need someone to talk to, more or less. So I'm going to put them on the show notes for this episode over at andysocial.net. I'm really struggling to get this out this afternoon. But some of those websites, from what I can see, is we've got mantherapy.org.au. There's wire.org.au for women. So the first one's for men, obviously. There's also beyondblue.org.au. There's also blackdoginstitute.org.au and relationships.org.au. There's a bunch of books that Shay's recommended and some apps as well. So I'm going to put all this stuff over in the show notes. I think there's some phone numbers as well for different counseling and support services. Really, really cool thing that she does for all of her guests. And I think the more that we share this information with each other, the better we all will be. And if, as I said at the beginning of this podcast, if you aren't from Australia, but you're curious to find out what's in your local area and need a little bit of help, by all means, reach out to me. I'm happy to do a bit of Googling with you and see if I can search for some appropriate places in your neck of the woods. It's the least that I can do to help you guys out. So andysocial.net's got all the links on there. As with all of my previous episodes, please reach out to Shay and let her know what you thought of this episode, as with all of my guests. And before I wrap this up, rate and review on iTunes, share this stuff around. If you think of anybody that might find some use out of this episode or any of the previous ones, pass it around. The more people listening, the better. Thank you so much for listening. And until next week, take care. Bye-bye.